don't talk to your mother like that.
Now, don't you pick on George. Has enough on his mind trying to think up ways to earn enough money to pay for your maid, which you don't need.
Oh, you see there, George, even your mother agrees with me.
Well, on the other hand, I can understand you wanting somebody to keep the place neat and clean. For a change.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, this is Daphne Maxwell Reed, and you are listening to TV Confidential.
Well, we're moving on up,
we're moving on up
to the east side,
moving on up
to a deluxe apartment in the sky.
Ed Robertson, welcome you back to TV Confidential, radio talk show about television that is happy to bring you part two of a conversation that began last week with award-winning writer-producer Jay Moriarty. Jay, along with his writing partner Mike Milligan, spent 7 years as a staff writer, producer, and later showrunner of The Jeffersons. The Jeffersons, the long-running sitcom produced by Norman Lear and starring Isabel Sanford and Sherman Hemsley. Jay also wrote for other Norman Lear shows, including the famous Draft Dodger episode of All in the Family, as well as episodes of such shows as Good Times, Maude, That's My Mama, The Royal Family, and What's Happening. Jay's memoir, Honky in the House, not only takes you inside the writing room of the Jeffersons, but reveals how a white dude from the Midwest can make a living writing and producing quote-unquote African-American shows with research, empathy, and imagination, but not necessarily in that order. Honky in the House is available online at Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. You can follow Jay Moriarty on Facebook. When we left off last week, we were beginning to talk about working with some of the various cast members of the Jeffersons, including Marla Gibbs and Isabel Sanford, as we pick up the conversation. You mentioned her briefly in Honky in the House, Jay, but Zara Cully, who played Mother Jefferson. I mean, she was another one of the reasons why you love watching the Jeffersons, because to see her and Louise Lockhorns, I don't know whether Isabel had a direct role in casting Zara Cully or whether she strongly recommended that they cast Zara, but I understand that she and Isabel in real life were very, very good friends.
That's true, yeah. They both have a real acting past in plays. In fact, Zara Cully was an acting teacher and acting cook. I wasn't around when Zara and Isabel were actually cast, but it's my understanding that Isabel did recommend Zara. In fact, Zara had actually said to her, if you ever get a chance to, have me play your mother, I could play your mother. And so turned out they could do that. And they, of course, they went head to head, the characters on stage, but they were very close. And everybody was sad to see Zara. She finally, I think she was like 86 when she passed of cancer. She was not well for a while, but the guys would still have her. Don used to say, we wish we could put her on wheels and then roll her on and off the stage, But she was great with delivery. If you notice the last couple of shows she was in, we had her seated in a chair, on the kitchen table and stuff, because she had trouble walking. But yeah, she was a real loss to the show and a real plus. And big Jefferson fans out there, big fans of Mother Jefferson, they all know what her favorite drink was, Bloody Mary, and how they just loved the fact that stuck up for her son about everything. He was never wrong. We did do an episode where Jenny and Lionel get married, and then and Louise becomes the mother-in-law. So Louise versus Jenny, I think, was the title of that episode where she becomes a mother-in-law. But yeah, there was a lot of, at Zara's funeral, all the cast, they're just a great, Frank Cover, who played the honky, and Roxy Roper, who played Helen Willis. just wonderful people, wonderful actors. Paul Benedict, who played Harry Bentley, was a well-known director and actor on Broadway. A lot of people think Harry was the Harry Bentley character was British. Paul was, you know, he's an American actor. Roxy Roker, by the way, Lenny Kravitz's mom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny Kravitz, who's now Lenny Kravitz,
yes.
was just a kid, you know. He was a little kid hanging around, you know. In fact, I remember Lenny saying they moved out here when he was 12 years old. His mom was going out to do this pilot. They didn't know how long they were going to be out. They moved. The first place they lived was in Santa Monica. And Lenny said when he got up, he was kind of, he didn't want to leave New York City. But he gets up in the morning and he goes outside and he says, where are all the people? Like, you know, Santa Monica is a lot different from New York as far as people being on the streets. But it was a wonderful cast. Charlie the bartender, too. I don't want to forget Charlie.
Oh, Danny
Wells.
Danny Wells, yeah.
Very talented actor, good comic, you know, and it was a good group.
And there are many great stories about that good group in Honky in the House. Honky in the House, writing and producing The Jeffersons by our guest, Jay Moriarty. You can find Honky in the House, Amazon.com, wherever books are sold online.
We're talking about characters. I should mention, and I realize Lionel and Jenny, you know, were a big part of the show. You know, actually, Mike Evans, who played Lionel, was kind of the first Jefferson, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how, what led to the spinoff. And then, of course, Mike went to pursue other things after the first 13 episodes of The Jeffersons.
Yeah, I understand. I understand one of the things he was pursuing was, I understand that he helped develop Good Times and get Good Times on the air. And so I was told that he left the Jeffersons so that he can focus behind the scenes on Good Times. Do you know?
Yeah, that's what you'd be told. That's what people say these days. But actually,
okay.
I don't want to say. Yeah, okay. Mike was he was involved in the creation of Good Times.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, I wasn't there and didn't see this personally, but from what I understand is Norman, you know, at the time wanted to spin off Esther Rolle, who was playing the Maud's maid, and do a show with a black family, which would be a novel thing. And he wanted black writers on the scene. Well, he asked Mike, do you know any black writers? You know, Mike knew a writer who had written Cooley High, which was, you remember the movie and everything?
Yeah, and which was later developed into What's Happening. Yeah.
Mike Evans and his friend writer got together and worked with Norman, and they did some original writing on the show, which became Good Times. In fact, the family's name is Evans, the same as Mike, you know, Mike Evans. And if you watch Good Times, you'll see created by Mike Evans and his then writing partner. But by, I think after first episode, though, Mike really wasn't involved in writing any of Good Times, you know. Why Mike left, it was my understanding at the time, and, you know, only Mike would know for sure, but he's not around anymore. Mike Evans, he died, you know, like in the early 50s when he was a pretty young guy. But I thought he was just wanted to pursue other acting kind of things.
Okay, so we could add that to the list of things that you debunk in Honky in the House. Honky in the House, Jay Moriarty's memoir behind the scenes of writing and producing The Jeffersons, which Jay did for 7 years along with his longtime writing partner, Mike Milligan.
I just want to keep Belinda Talbert. What a great actress she was.
Yes.
And what a joy to have around she was, who played Jenny on the show. And I didn't want to fail to mention her contribution to the show.
You know. And you can read about Belinda Talbert and all the other cast members in Honky in the House, writing and producing The Jeffersons by Jay Moriarty, which you can find right now, Amazon.com.
Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
This is a basic question. I always like to ask it. Why is it that writing for comedy requires two people? I mean, it always seems to be done in tandem.
Well, I'll tell you, in the early days, which I guess were the 70s when I started out, they liked hiring teams. So, as I mentioned in the book, and I addressed that subject, but that's what I got to the point. It took me, when I first came out, it was like 4 years to finally, I knew nothing about writing. You know, I knew I wanted to write for television, but I didn't know anything about it. There were no, when I was in college, Xavier University, and there were no courses in film writing or writing for TV or screen, anything like that. So when I came out, it took me like 4 years to figure, and I figured you needed three things to make it in writing comedy for television. One is a spec script, two is an agent, and three is a partner. And they like to hire teams. And also, when you're working on comedy, it's good to have somebody to bounce it off. You know, this is funny, you know. If you tell a joke in the forest, is it funny? I mean, I don't know. If your partner and you lay, you know, when you tell something, the other guy laughs, or when you both laugh, and hey, that's funny. And then also is, you know, and when I end up producing, when I would get scripts from agents, and I would always look for a script with two people on it as opposed to one, figuring I get two for the price of one, you know. You hope one of the guys isn't crazy at least. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. So when you write with a partner, you pretty much have to share the money, but you can move a lot faster with a partner too. Like, you know, once Mike and I got in and could do things, then when we end up producing and running the show, it's all really good to have a partner to, okay, you take care of this, I'll take care of that, this kind of thing, you know. And it's just a big thing. But nowadays it's a little different when you're room writing. Everything is room written. If you read Honky in the House, you'll see that in those days, Norman shows, there were no writer's rooms per se. You know, we get together maybe and give notes on things, but it kind of went up the chain. You know, you guys write the first draft, second draft, we'll give you notes, and then we'll take it from here. And, you know, we didn't sit around in a room. Today, they sit, you know, 12 guys in a room, and, you know, two guys might not say anything, and you ruin a dynamic. A lot of times, I mean, I've known writing teams where one guy doesn't talk much and the other one does. And a person just looking and say, well, why don't you get rid of that guy that doesn't talk? Well, in the room, in other words, they have their own dynamic in the room. Writers, what I found out, I've written on a lot of shows now where we have writers' rooms, but a lot of the best talkers are not good writers. You send them off to write a scene and they come back and like, what's this? But in a room, they're talking. And so I've always kind of, you know, it seems like an oxymoron to me to have a writer's room, you know. Writing is usually, I mean, look at drama, you know. You write screenplays or books come out of one guy, you know. So you get a bunch of people together and, I don't know, hopefully you'll get a good broth. But you know what they say about too many chefs. Plus, it takes longer. You're sitting there till 3 in the morning. Everybody, you know. Two guys get it done a lot faster.
And I believe it was your friend Ted Bergman who said, that's one of the things he talks about in his book.
Confessions of a
rogue comedy writer. He talks about the lack of wisdom of trying to stay up until 3 o'clock in the morning to rewrite something, because 9 times out of 10, something that's funny at 3 o'clock in the morning is not funny at 9 o'clock when you're sober and awake and full of coffee. And there's a wisdom.
One of the many good points he makes in his book. Yeah.
So
and he was in the old days. I mean, Sanford and Son, he started that. And well, he goes back to Smothers Brothers and all. But yeah, it's changed a lot today as far as that writer's room thing. And part of it changed when sitcom writers were getting their own shows, like Roseanne's a good example. And then for writing staff, she brought in a lot of funny comics that she knows, but they're not necessarily writers. When you're writing a half-hour play, it's a little bit more disciplined than that. So not to say that stand-up comics can't be good writers, but
it's a different form. It's a different form. It requires a different sort of thought process and a different kind of structure. We've talked about every cast member of the Jeffersons except Sherman Hemsley himself. And one of the things you tell your readers in Honky in the House, Jay, is that it just shows what a great actor Sherman Hemsley was. Sherman and George were diametrically opposite people.
Yeah, you can't get more opposite George Jefferson than Sherman Hemsley was. Sherman was all about peace, love, you know, everything was peace, love. In fact, his company, I think, was called Peace Love Inc. He was just a wonderful person and just a real innocent. I mean, you know, would never be calling anybody any kind of names or slurs or just was just a real quiet, shy guy. Kind of a word on the court of the show. When Mike and I first started writing on the Jeffersons, he would come in our office. He would always identify with the lowest person on the totem pole. He would come in and sleep on our sofa, you know, during lunch and everything. And we got to know Sherman really well. He would give an example when we first started. He would take at the dinner, you know, we had dinner between shows, and first thing he would do is make a plate of food and take it down to the security guard. I mean, you know, how could you not love a guy like this? Yeah. He was just, and that's the way when we became, you know, Mike and I were running the show when we went over to Hawaii, and we went to pick up Sherman at the airport, and we go, hey, Sherman, you know, welcome to Aloha. Where's your, let's go get your luggage. And he goes, what luggage? We said, well, didn't you bring some luggage? No, he didn't bring a thing. It was just T-shirt, jeans, and sneakers. That's the way he didn't even bring a toothbrush. So, you know, he just did a kind of, he was like a little kid, but he was a wonderful kid. He was a wonderful actor. When he got on that stage, he was just boom. Remember when we had Billy Dee Williams on the show, you know, Billy Dee played himself. You know, Florence had a thing for Billy Dee. So Billy Dee, when we're at the, given notes before we go on to after dress rehearsal to go on in front of an audience, Sherman's sitting back just kind of, you know, leaning like this with eyes half closed, half asleep, and Jack Shea, the director, to give the notes, you know, particular things like when you open the door, open with your left hand instead of your right hand so camera three can see it, and when you say this line instead of saying it real calm, get real excited, and Billy Dee, I'm sitting there, he turns to me and says he's never going to get the because he looked like he was asleep, you know. And I said to Billy, I said, well, wait, you'll see. And when we did the show, Sherman had exactly what he says, left hand. Afterwards, Billy Dee said to me, well, he called me Moriarty. He called Mike and I by our last name. He said, Moriarty, you're right about your man. And then Sherman was that way. He was just a wonderful actor and in person, very shy. You didn't see him on talk shows much, you know. He didn't like to talk much. He just was quiet, shy. And,
well, he was a consummate artist in that way. It was about the work. It was about the show. It was about the character. I don't know whether you talked to him or whether he talked to you about the George character and how it suddenly evolved.
Sherman telling me, and I mentioned in the book about how his process. He says when he gets a script, he doesn't like pay much attention to memorizing the lines or anything. He kind of reads through it quickly and just kind of gets the feel of what the story's about and then goes from there. And he was always get their lines. You know, a lot of shows you work on, they have to stop. You know, the actors go up, they forget their lines. And if Jefferson's, boy, it's like British actors. You know, they all knew their lines. And one of the tricks, though, was John, Mickey, and Bernie, we learned everything from them. But basically, By the time you're Friday, you pretty much lock your script in. You don't, if you have to make any changes, you make them over the weekend. But by the time they get their script on Monday, that's it. You don't make changes because it just, and then shows do just the opposite these days. They make changes all the way up to, well, they're taping this, they're running, walking changes into the actors. And you just don't get the best performances that way. So the actors know that if they lock it in their lines, really, if they lock them in by Friday, because they were supposed to have them be off book by Friday, that it's not going to change much. So they feel comfortable. These days, actors are like, well, why should I remember? Because they're going to rewrite the whole script overnight, and then I'll get a whole new script in the morning. You know?
Jay Moriarty is with us via Skype. Jay's book, Honky in the House, Writing and Producing The Jeffersons, is a behind-the-scenes look at Jay's 7 years as staff writer, producer, and later showrunner of the Jeffersons. We'll talk some more with Jay when we come back, including why it is a disservice to the George Jefferson character to consider him a quote-unquote African-American Archie Bunker. We'll talk some more with Jay Moriarty after this quick timeout here on TV Confidential.
Okay, we are running a car drive right now to help veterans all across America. So if you have an old car, truck, or van, even a motorcycle or an RV sitting around, you can right now give it away and help the vets. They really need your help. And your car will help support the vets and their families. And guess what? You even get a tax donation. Plus, we'll even come and pick up your car for free. And all you've got to do is pick up your phone right now and make a free call. Now is the perfect time to do something good for the vets. Give back to the vets right now for all they've done for this country. And your old car can really help them. So call the Veterans Car Donation Program right now for free pickup of your vehicle. Help the vets and help your taxes at the same time. Call right now.
800-890-1032. 800-890-1032. 800-890-1032. That's 800-890-1032.
If your loved one has passed away due to COVID-19, pay close attention to this message. You could be entitled to a death benefit of over $300,000. The U.S. government has set up a fund to pay families relief if they've lost a loved one due to COVID-19. We know this is a hard time for you, and this fund has been set up by the federal government to help ease your pain. The compensation includes a death benefit and lost wages benefit. Time is limited, so we urge you to make a free phone call right now. There's no cost to you for this claim. All legal fees are only covered once you receive your money. So if you've lost a loved one due to COVID-19, call the legal helpline right now to find out if you qualify for a cash award. Here's our number. 800-915-8054. 800-915-8054. 800-915-8054. That's 800-915-8054. Paid for by the IPG Law Group.
Know someone with a drinking or drug problem? Learn how to get sober after we share these stories.
I was 35 with two beautiful children when my life and addiction started to spiral out of control. After my divorce, I went into a depression cycle and started drinking more often and using prescription drugs. After my second DWI and arrest, my ex-husband threatened to take our children away from me.
I was 17 when I became addicted to heroin and meth. I thought I could quit on my own, but I couldn't. It hit me when I was arrested.
Get sober now. Your private insurance may cover costs, and we'll get you here. It's simple. Just call Elite Rehab Placement right now. Please, don't wait. Your life matters to us.
800-917-2194. 800-917-2194. 800-917-2194. That's 800-917-2194.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or @TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.